This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
And Morton's not going to walk him here. Eli De La Cruz with his second home run of the series. Fraley, right field, a little floater for a base hit. It's going to bring in Hayes. Lux right behind him, and Steer gets to third. It's a two-run single and a 4-1 Cincinnati lead with still nobody out.
Yeah, I mean, I've been with Charlie for 5 starts, so... You know, he's got a track record of having a really good career, and you know, right now it's he's having a tough time. The command's not, you know, he walked a bunch today again, and just had a tough time getting through. I mean, a day we really desperately needed some innings. That was a challenge.
So you're the low lights, and then you heard Brandon Hyde talking about Charlie Morton, and Charlie Morton after the game Saturday. Brandon Hyde said, we need some innings out of you, Charlie Morton. And Charlie Morton gave you 7 outs and 7 earned runs and walked 4. And the ERA, which we thought couldn't go much higher, Jason, when it was over 8, is now almost 11. He is 0-5 with a 10.89 ERA. And I don't know how much longer you can go with this guy every fifth day. It's embarrassing. It will an Easter to remember for O's fans, that's for damn sure, as the Orioles lose 24-2 yesterday at home.
They play a shameful brand of baseball. They send a shameful product out there 3 to 4 days a week. It's not opinion. It's reality. It's been tipping in a precipitously dangerous direction since early to mid-June last year. There have been no course corrections by the powers that be in the front office, whether in how they handle a team, how they address a team, their bedside manner, their lack of awareness, the human side of it, the numbers side of it, the spending real money side of it, the managing the owner side of it. And it's been a disaster. It's not surprising to me. They don't put a premium on baseball IQ. They don't put a premium on holistically well-rounded baseball players. They don't put a premium on scouting. So much that is garbage baseball falls through the cracks because a guy can really hit this type of lefty, or, ooh, we love what he does against this pitch, or we think we're smarter than the rest of the league here. You're not smarter than anybody. You're no good at your job at the major league level as a front office, and you haven't been for years, plural, since you started botching the trade deadline 2 years ago. Ken, it's a hate watch.
Yeah.
It's a hate watch.
That's how I described to somebody
even
yesterday.
When they win, like Friday night, I still can't get over to Major League Baseball game seeing two guys picked off the bases within 2 innings of each other. Like, it's just, and if you cannot watch this like we watch this and think this is a coinkydink or a quirk. Like, they're too young for their own good. They're more naive than ever. They have less reinforcements than ever. It's pathetic. When Austin Wins comes in here with a spur up his backside and outplays your whole team, That's pathetic. When Austin Hayes does the same thing, that's pathetic. When Toronto's closer, who's never even threw a pitch for you, but is so pissed off at the way you handled his negotiation, comes in here with more piss and vinegar and venom in your ballpark than your whole team can muster, and Santander's got the same smirk on his face as he assassinates you, that's a problem. The pitching is a joke. We told you it was going to be a joke. The guy doesn't know what he's doing. He can't put a staff together. He has no clue how to reinforce a team for 162 games. People get fired for this in the real world. People get fired. I don't think this owner is awake yet. I don't think he understands just how bad and dire it is. But that game wasn't a one-off.
No. The thing that's so, and we're going to do a six-pack later about the unserious nature of how they do business, but and I can go on my soapbox about bringing in a legit everyday player with some pedigree to get these guys in line. But the starting rotation that they put together this offseason is frankly embarrassing, and we tried to tell you that it wasn't going to be good, and frankly, it's been worse. Like Charlie Morton's 41 years old. Tomoyuki Sugano, maybe he's okay, but he's never pitched in the major leagues. Like, Dean Kramer's a mid guy. I like Zach Eflin. Zach Eflin's hurt. Injuries happen. Injuries are happening all over baseball. What did you do to mitigate for those injuries? Zero. You did zero. Kyle Gibson, is he the guy that's going to save the day?
I watched him at Aberdeen yesterday. I'll tell you about it later.
Brandon Young did not look ready for this on Saturday. Cade Povich does not look like a finished product. This is disgusting. And like, when you spend no money on your rotation and you have no pitching prospects, this is what you get.
And you put no premium on defense. You think you can move anybody anywhere, sure, whenever you want, and you'll be okay. You can't have a staff this atrocious at getting swing and miss. It's the worst swing and miss staff in baseball. You can't couple that with horse bleep defense.
Yeah.
A couple of DHs in right field. A second baseman who still doesn't know what the hell he's doing because you never really played him there in the minors more than 40 games. You keep telling me Ramon won a gold glove 3 years ago. I mean...
He makes some nice plays.
Yeah, but he's not supposed to. I'm not supposed to be seeing this much Ramon.
Yeah. No, I hear you. What's frustrating for me, and it shows you the level of frustrations. Like, my father called me yesterday. He goes, Ryan O'Hearn should never be in right field. I go, I don't disagree, but that's like way down the list of things that are upsetting me about this baseball team. Saturday, you saw a kid who wasn't ready for this, who gave up seven straight base runners. And then Sunday, you saw a guy, Jason, on the complete other end of the spectrum, who is so done it's not funny and can't get anybody out.
If you don't believe me that I've known better about that ship of fools forever, just trust your lying eyes. The great Bill Belichick has messed plenty of things up in his career. But you know what he was really good at? When I realize I missed the mark, I nip that in the bud and I do whatever it takes to try to start winning again. If they send Charlie Morton out there again in 4 days, it will be the absolute confirmation of all their inherent biases, which are, we're smarter than you. We know more than you. We want to be right. We don't want to do whatever it takes to put together nine innings to score one more run than the other team. We want to do it on our terms with our guys. And we gave them that much money. So guess what? You pay your good money and keep watching that slop. If that's what they shove down your throats, and I think they will, again, take it for what it's worth. It's not professional grade. It's beneath you. It's beneath the Oriole way. And this is why I told you I'm spending no money on this product as long as these people are in charge, because it is hopeless.
Well, it's direct to consumer now, Jason. We can get the games with an app now, finally. There's that. And you got bobbleheads and hockey jerseys this weekend. So there's that.
Well, you know what there also is, now that you mention that? Because if you want to talk about, and we've been ahead of this curve, like pretty much everything else about this team, and how they're not ready for prime time, and how they are too young and a little too naive, and they're built to maybe win in May, but not win in October. Since 2023, when there are 30,000 people or more at Camden Yards, they are 28-30, including the playoffs. Their winning percentage with 30,000 people or more in the stands since the start of 2023 in the regular season, 28-26, is 19th in baseball. Because it kind of watching them anecdotally, it's like, man, when that place is packed, except for the odd opening day, they really pee down their legs. Like, this team doesn't know how to handle expectations, and you can chart it. They were playing above their heads. We'll go back to that clip after I got back from Yankee Stadium last year. We're going to find that clip and play it this week. They were playing so far over their heads from opening day until that series in the Bronx last year when they scored 17 runs and ran Hill out of there and Povich pitched out of jams and Austin Hayes is hitting home runs. That wasn't the real them. The real them was going to show when people started judging them by that standard. And since that point, from the GM on down, they all have failed miserably, and they're not going to clean up their own mess. They don't know how to. The kids in that clubhouse don't know how to. This manager isn't empowered enough to do so. The closest thing they had to a bad cop, Freddy Gonzalez, got ran out of the building. Like, it is kindergarten, and it shows they don't know what base to throw to. They don't know when to hit the cutoff man. They don't know when to slide. They don't know how big of a lead to take. And they don't know how to show up to play nine innings of baseball 5 or 6 days a week. It's shameful. People should be fired.
Big Monday show. No bone today, but we will get all over the Orioles and the Ravens. It is draft week. Obviously, the NFL draft starts on Thursday. Guest-wise, Jacob Calvin-Meyer, what does he think of the Orioles as they sit here 9-12 with a day off today? Covers the Ocean with the Baltimore Sun, joins at 3. Jonas Schaefer, it's draft week. What does he think the Ravens are going to do in the first round? He covers them for the Baltimore Battery, joins us at 4. What about the rest of the AFC North? Aditi Kinkabwala from CBS. We'll get her thoughts. What are the Steelers going to do for a quarterback? We'll ask her at 4:30. And our own Cordell Woodland, he was out there this weekend. What was it like watching that firsthand? He'll join us at 5.
Yeah. Plenty to get to here between the two birds in town, the O's and the Ravens. Talked to a bunch of general managers, some head coaches over the weekend, starting to gather more and more intel about this draft. We'll impart some of that to you. I have some ideas about the Steelers that you probably haven't heard elsewhere. And as I said, I was at Aberdeen yesterday. I watched Kyle Gibson pitch. I will have a full report on what I saw and what it means for the Baltimore Orioles.
Got to be better than Charlie Morton, I would say that.
Absolutely.
That's a low bar to clear. Hey, coming up next, all the young dudes and these young dudes, their approach on Friday and what the hell, their struggles against left-handed pitching continue over the weekend. That's next here on
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan.
Mullins skies one into right center field. Hit deep. Hit high. Hit out of here.
Oh.
Matching power with power. Cedric Mullins with another orange crush. Gunnar Henderson, the next batter, to deep center field. And that one's gone. Back-to-back batters in the span of three pitches, an early party.
So the highlights, courtesy of Masson, Orioles against Hunter Green, who had arguably, and Jason, you did a great job outlining this on Friday. Hunter Green's been arguably as good a pitcher as there's been in all of baseball since like the second half of last year. And the Orioles jumped on him and jumped on him early. You heard Cedric Mullins and Gunnar Henderson back-to-back home runs in the first. They got another run in the second and two more in the third. Brandon Young wasn't good, but they did beat Hunter Green on Saturday.
He wasn't good, but he wasn't, you know, he didn't quit on the mound like I think some of these guys have. He battled a little bit. He's not ready for this. It's tough the first time. And look, he didn't think he'd be bled in on a team that can't win two games in a row, that can't catch the ball, that doesn't know where to throw the ball to when they do catch it. I'm sure that's not the kind of situation he thought he'd be thrust into whenever he did make his MLB debut for a franchise that was bragging about liftoff years ago. I don't know, GG. Like, I don't want to make... I don't want to make too much of one start. I'm on record as saying what I think the young man is. I think the young man's a long reliever at the major league level. I've seen him pitch a lot in the minors. I think he can be on a really good team. I think he could be a useful second, third tier part in a bullpen. I think he will get a lot of starts this year because they're not going to have a choice.
No.
And I suspect it's pretty rough.
I think he can get better. At one point, he gave up seven straight base runners. Like that, yeah. You can't do that. But, yeah.
But they were hitting Hunter Green,
yes.
And he didn't leave with them painfully behind.
No.
And if we're taking any good out of the weekend, and we know these guys can hit velocity.
Yes.
And they still can hit velocity because nobody throws harder than Hunter Green. And the guys at the top of the lineup were ready to absolutely mash.
And another
Cedric
good day from the
continues
bullpen.
Continues to do what he's done. Yes. And there are guys in the bullpen right now who are presenting themselves better than they ever have in their Orioles career. It's pretty brief for a lot of them.
Yes.
But yes, so Brandon Young goes back down. Fear not. We're going to see
Petit.
Plenty of Brandon Young.
We got Cody Petit yesterday.
He's terrible.
Friday
night. He was terrible enough.
Yeah. Friday, and it's a shame because he was actually pretty good. What was for the Yankees a year ago before he got traded to the Cubs in the Bellinger trade and that how that all worked out. But he's bad. But Friday night, we want to get to Friday night, which was another. And when they lose, Jason, it's never like a close. It's ugly. It's bad baseball.
Yep.
And Friday night was another example. It's Cade Povich bad on Friday night, 3 1/3, 7 or 5 walks, Jason.
That's the look. The one thing he had been doing was he'd get in some deep counts, but he had been mitigating disaster and. He reverted to some of his worst tendencies from the Cade, because he wasn't slim in this one, the Cade that he was early last year. Now, again, given the way this team is built, I would rather watch Cade Povich and Brandon Young battle and fight through things and figure some stuff out as
kids Charlie Morton.
At 25, 26 years old at the major league level than I would watch Sagano break out in full body sweats when things get tough and Charlie Morton literally has no business pitching in AAA right now, let alone the majors. So I'm just going to tell you, I would still rather try to develop. He's developed nothing.
Yeah.
None of their homegrown guys, and Povich isn't even homegrown, was in a trade. They've developed no pitching. He's been here since 2018. I'd rather see them lean into that than throw the junk out there that he wasted $30 million on.
Sagano has given him the best start of the year, though.
That's great.
He's a different level than Morton is a freaking abject failure. Like, I hear what you're saying, and I think there's credence to it, but I think that Sagano and Morton are almost on different levels because of how bad Morton is and how old Morton is. They didn't even sign the right 40-year-old. You saw Verlander yesterday?
Dude, they like punted Verlander. On the offseason. They punted on the offseason. But let's get to Friday.
I don't mean to get distracted. Yeah. Sorry.
Let's get to Friday.
Plus, they can't hit lefties.
Because the only things they did. On the margins, Mike Elias, I've got a 100-win team here. I'm so smart. You're so stupid. Watch me throw in Sanchez and O'Neill and Laureano, who Laureano has started to hit the ball, obviously. And watch what we do to lefties this year. How do you think the skipper feels about what he's been watching with these at-bats against lefties, Beltway, Ben?
Definitely not handling lefties. I don't know. We had a set homer, and our other hit against him was because the shortstop slipped. So... You know, you're trying to rely on your right-handed guys to have good at-bats against them. I thought our at-bats last year against them were okay. You know, Rutschman went deep, Mateo went deep. We hit some balls hard against them. Tonight, just I thought we had two biggest swings. Didn't take our walks. It was a tough night for us offensively. A lot of punch-outs.
6 innings, 2 hits, 1 walk, 1 run, 11 strikeouts against Abbott.
It's pathetic because he wasn't even throwing that many strikes, but he was striking everybody out, which was a testament to just how garbage their at-bats were. I get it. People keep telling me it's early. I don't know. All these games count. Do they charge less for the games over the week in the weekends?
No.
Games in April because it's not September. They charge less for that.
No.
I think they charge more when they give out the. They don't let you know, but they charge more for the giveaways. There's nothing given away. You're paying for it. They have a 184 team batting average against left-handed pitching. That's 29th in baseball. They have a 259 on base percentage against left-handed pitching. That's 28th in baseball. They have a 253 slug. A 253 slug against left-handed pitching. That is far and away worst in baseball. They have a 512 OPS against left-handed pitching. That's 29th in baseball. They have 53 strikeouts and 174 plate appearances against lefties.
It's not good. And the sample size keeps growing.
Well, the sample size goes back to last year.
Yeah, yeah. But
they didn't fix anything.
No, they didn't fix a damn thing. And again, a legitimate everyday
and this is
player.
Four times now where a guy's left the mound and it's the best start ever or the best start in forever or Crochet, his best start as a Red Sox. You can tell me. He didn't have too many of the White Sox that were better than that either.
No. No.
Bubich, best start ever. Abbott, best start ever. And how about this? So we get the Saturday bleep show on the red side, and they're getting boat raced. And so they take Spire, Sunday starter, and just burn him out. Do they go and get their best lefty, Lodolo, and summon him for Sunday like he was originally scheduled to?
Oh, he's got paternity leave. He had a baby.
So they go ahead and just go with an opener.
Yes.
Who'd thrown like six innings all year.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
Well, he was only going to go 1-2, but because the game went, he went three.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. And by then it was 100-0. So what's the difference? Well, sorry, the Orioles did get one run. Hey, didn't Adley homer late?
Hooray!
The Orioles lose 24-2 yesterday. They are off today. Start a 3-game series in Washington against the Nationals tomorrow. But coming up next, we switch to football. We are just 3 days away from the NFL draft. What are the legitimate edge defensive tackle options available to the Baltimore Ravens? Jason's been talking to football people. We're going to tell you next here on The Fan.
Truly a blessing because I feel like that's the best D-tackle in the game right now. How quickly he is to grab wrists and elbows, I feel like that comes natural to me. So I feel like our game really shows each other like that. So yes, ma'am.
Derek Harmon, defensive tackle out of Oregon, talking about people comparing him to Chris Jones. And before we discuss him, let's hear from one more kid. Walter Nolan is a defensive tackle from Ole Miss. He was asked what separates him from the others.
I feel like I do everything. Like I said, it's kind of hard to find somebody that look like me and do the things I do. So that's all it is.
Got examples of what you do that others can't?
Well, I feel like I get off the ball better than a lot of people. I feel like it's just my versatility. Like a lot of people probably don't get to the league and play one position. I want to play everything. So
he wants to play all over the line. And both Harmon and Nolan are guys that, according to some, could be available if the Ravens stay at 27. We shall see. The kid from Michigan, is it Grant, is another one that people think could be there if the Ravens stay at 27. So what are you hearing as we are now 3 days away from the draft?
Yeah. I think a lot of these mock drafters, when you see their final mock drafts this week, are going to reflect things we've been telling you on this show for quite some time, that Derek Harmon's going in the top half of the first round, and it's not totally out of the question. It's more like the 10 to 12 range than it is, 16. I think Shamar Stewart, who we've talked about out of A&M, could be the second defensive lineman to Abdul Carter taken in this whole thing. Like, I hear he's in play for Carolina at 8th overall. Walter Nolan is one of the guys that our buddy Bobby D absolutely loves in this draft. He does think he can play all over the D line. He thinks you can play him at outside linebacker in a 5-2 look. He thinks that these teams are different. Some teams, the coaches have more influence than the GMs. And a coach who really falls in love with this kid and his multiplicity, and you look at a guy with that much weight and that much size doing some of the things that they think he's going to be able to do athletically in their scheme. And hey, if we want to run a 3-4, he fits in two spots. Hey, if we want to run a 4-3, he might fit everywhere, at least as a rotational guy to start. there's going to be people who bang the drum for him. Honestly, after talking to a lot of people this weekend, three GMs, a couple scouting directors, a head coach, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Walter Nolan is the second D tackle off the board after Mason Graham. I don't know that Derek Harmon waits a whole lot longer into the early teens to hear his name called. And the kid who might drop is Kenneth Grant, just because of his body type, not as much projectable pass rush. I don't know that he gets all the way to the Ravens. I still think he's going in the first round. Yeah, he's the other sort of Michigan kid. Mason Graham from Michigan's going to I don't think he gets past that's, you know, the Jets at seven, something like that. I think he's probably as low as he goes. But yeah, I think this group is going to be picked through. I even like the idea that there'll be an edge for them. I'm starting to hear a lot of teams in the late teens, early 20s are leaning into grabbing their pass rush there because they do think it falls off a cliff even more than some of the run stuffing, D tackle stuff does. That they'll wait on some of that. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that the Ravens won't just decide to take a safety here, because I think GG, some of that work is going to be done for them. One kid who I think nobody's talking about in the first round, but I do wonder if the Ravens stay there and things fall a certain way, would be TJ Sanders, a D tackle out of South Carolina, who a lot of people would say is probably a second rounder, but I there's some cultivatable pass rush there, and there's some positional flexibility. He's another kid, can play in odd sets, can play in even sets. There are ways, if you're a little bit creative, to get him in your front seven, first down, second down, third down, again, in a little different role, depending on the situation. Like, I wonder if that's a guy who, if the Ravens don't do it, maybe Buffalo does it. If this group does get picked through in terms of the household names sooner than expected, I wonder if a kid like that ends up making sense. And just too many teams I talked to over the weekend think that the BC pass rusher really fits with what the Ravens do. That might be one where, hey, we can't wait.
As a rocker.
We can't pass. Like, if he gets past the Steelers and some of these other 3-4 teams, even if it's him versus Bates, I wonder if they don't go pass rush, because with where they're picking day two and with them not really wanting to trade up, all things being even, I wonder if they wait, you know, they wait on a safety and take the pass rusher.
Yeah, I was talking, obviously you talk to a lot more people than I do. People I was talking to this weekend kind of feel like, and I know this is more a conversation for next segment, but their suspicion is they go O-line in the first round, which is like just the way they feel like the boards are going to fall. Does that sound like
they
something?
They could. I just don't know that people feel that once you get past the first four offensive linemen that you're really talking about the kind of sure things that you might normally be thinking about an offensive lineman taken in the 20s. I talked again, all three of these GMs are picking in the second half of the first round.
Yeah.
They all thought that Bates would be there.
Yeah.
They thought there'd be scenarios where the defense gets picked through in terms of the front seven, and that it could come down to, I'm not Bates, Starks.
Oh, yeah, Malachi Starks.
It could come down to Starks versus the fifth or sixth or seventh best offensive lineman. And in that case, I think it would be Starks. What I'm sure the Ravens will be watching in terms of the safety of it all is, like, the Emmanuel kid, I could see even going to San Francisco at 11, and other people I talked to. If he goes that high, then I don't know that Seattle passes on Starks. And then if they're both gone, and there's a run on defensive linemen, and it starts with a guy like Stewart going eighth, right, who maybe not everybody would take eighth, but if they take him eighth, then Walker and Williams, these other guys are going to go. The kid from Marshall's going to go.
Yeah, Green, yeah.
Then it becomes a situation where, the decision could be made for them. They could be sitting there, and maybe there's only three or four offensive linemen who have gone, and that they might have an offensive lineman who's standing out on their board from a value perspective, and the decision's made for them.
The question is, does the Leopard change its spots and do they trade up for somebody they value because they know they're not going to drop to them? Or do they do what they usually do, and if the board clears, do they trade down?
See, I wonder if that's if it's down to, like, the top two safeties are gone, pass rush pick through. Yeah, there's some run-stuffing D-tackles we like, but, man, we don't want to take that in the first round. Could they trade out and maybe somebody comes in for a quarterback? Now, I will tell you this. I don't think it's out of the question that four quarterbacks go in the first 32. I mean, I had
Milrow.
Multiple people tell me
or Shaw
that they'd be mildly surprised but not shocked. And the point to watch there will be people in this league are convinced that Kellen Moore wants Jackson Dart and not Shedeur Sanders. So if Jackson Dart goes to New Orleans, there's no way that people think Mike Tomlin's passing on Shedeur Sanders if he gets. So 21 would be the floor for him. And then does somebody, the Louisville kid, people either hate him or can dream on him. I don't Tyler know Schell. That it would be for him. Maybe it's for Milrow. But then does somebody say, let me get to 28, 29 and get the quarterback before Cleveland and those guys get a second shot at him day two? And it could even be a Cleveland or a Giants who move up four or five spots to get Milrow there. Or maybe it's the show. Maybe it is Louisville or maybe it's something else. I doubt it. But I would have told you on Friday, no bleeping way, four in the first round.
Yeah.
I would tell you right now.
You're putting some money on
that?
It
wouldn't shock me. I'm not. I don't know. I haven't seen the lines move. If I get 3.5,
yeah,
everything's still been at 2.5 that I could find. So you get no value for over 2.5.
Sure.
Now, if they move it up to 3.5, I might flirt with the over if it's juiced enough.
Coming up next here on the program, we just talked about some defensive linemen, some edge, some offensive line. So begs the question, any chance, assuming the Ravens stay at 27, it's going to be something other than defense or offensive line for the Ravens? We'll tell you next here on The Fan. NFL draft is 3 days away. We're going to do a hypothetical exercise here. Assuming the Ravens stay at 27, any chance the pick isn't a defensive player or an offensive lineman, Jason?
I have a hard time coming up with potential value at other positions that would make sense. Like, the top two tight ends, I think, are gone by pick 14. Now, there could be three running backs that go in this draft, and they could look at whichever one is still there after Denver picks, Ohio State or North Carolina, and they could have a super high grade on him, and they could look at him as similar to how they did Dobbins a few years. Like, this guy can win for us on first, second, third down, can win for us in the screen game. These kids, I think, both.
The Hampton
pass
kid,
protect, pass protect better than Dobbins, but, like, I don't know, man. Can they really do that there? I don't think they'd be able to. I don't. You can't force a trade out. Like, it takes two to tango.
Uh huh.
But I have a hard time realistically doing this exercise and looking at who could be there and seeing a position that they would reach for other than just dipping back into what's left at offensive line or somewhere in the front seven.
Yeah, I can't
see. I mean, it could be a corner, but that's defense.
Yes. They're not taking a wide receiver at 27.
I mean,
like, I think it's
probably like, not. Like, if the kid from Ohio State was there,
yeah, Ibekwe,
yeah. I mean,
Ibuke, sorry.
Could you do that? Trademark Andrews, right? You become much more of an 11 personnel team. You're not worried about the, you know, collecting tight ends anymore. You extend Likely, who's basically a wide receiver.
Yes.
You still got Ricard. Kohler's your blocker. I mean, could you do that? Now D-Hop really becomes just a situational, you know, jump ball in the red zone guy and just deep depth. Do I think they could? I think for the right kid, they could. And my suspicion is that might be... That might be the right kid. Now, like, I think Pittsburgh really likes him. I think the Rams really like him, but they've got other needs. And Pittsburgh could have a quarterback staring him in the face. We'll do a deeper dive on them a little later in the show. I guess wide receiver would be the only one.
Like if by
I
some
could
miracle,
come up with.
Some miracle, the Arizona wide receiver McMillan or the Texas wide receiver Golden.
That would shock
me. If they somehow, because I don't see how it happens, but if by some miracle, and we see guys slip.
Yeah.
Like, but if one of those dudes slips to 27, like they run the card up for one of those guys.
I think it'd be hard. Again, factoring in all the other players that would have to be gone in order for that to take place,
mm-hmm.
then you could have a wide receiver who's sitting there. And, you know, you could say that we struggled to have enough for so long. Now, can you really have too many? And you know, the Bateman extension might be trickier than we think. And Zay's got a different body type, right? So even if you pay Zay big, you still would want to have some guys who are built a little differently for the long term.
And as you pointed out, at the running back position, the kid O'Marrion Hampton from North Carolina or Travion Henderson from Ohio State, if one of those kids is sitting there at 27.
I don't know that they could do – could they do that? I don't – that'd be a tough sell.
I don't see how they do it, but Hampton – I don't know how Hampton's getting past Denver. Like is Sean Payton really?
Unless they take Henderson, I am not sold that Sean Payton thinks that his rankings of running backs are exactly like Mock Draft Nation's rankings of running backs. His rankings of quarterbacks last year were not like Mock Draft Nation's ranking of quarterbacks.
He loved Bo Nix.
I'm not sure he doesn't like Ohio State more. And if who's going to tell him if he does? No one's going to say, this guy really likes the UNC. Like of the draft Knicks think UNC is the number two running back. Nobody's saying a damn thing. So that's what I'm saying. Like I could see that happening. Like we talked about with the I could see the tight end two allegedly air quotes Loveland going before Warren. Now again, I think they're both going by 14. We're probably talking the difference between three or four spots. So I'm not going to get too caught up in that.
Sure.
But I think there could be a third running back who gets taken. Now, again, can they trade out? Is there somebody who looks at that value and says, we really want it, and they wait to day two and see what's left at edge? There'll certainly be D tackles they like. There'll be a safety that they like. It won't be one of the probably two big safeties. But I'm not sure that they're going to be there anyway.
To your point, and we discussed it last segment, if Cleveland comes calling for 27 because there's a quarterback they like, and you trade back to the second pick of the second round.
I think they would love that.
Yes.
Especially if the board is picked apart.
Yes.
If the if we're into five or six D tackles gone and four edge are gone and the two safeties are gone, and so it's, you know, offensive line prospects but not studs. Yes, I think their dream scenario would be somebody moves up for a skill guy, and especially if they only had a fallback till the second pick at Friday, that would be great for them.
How soon does Genty come off the board?
If I had to do an exercise right now, I would put him fifth to the Jags.
Wow.
And he goes no further down than 10th to the Bears. To me, 5 to 10 is absolutely his sweet spot.
Like, do the Raiders, I feel like they... If he's there at six, they take.
They could. I don't think he's going to be there at six, so I have them taking McMillan.
Interesting. Hey, we will continue talking football all through the show, including at 4 o'clock. We'll talk to Jonas Schaefer, get his thoughts on what the Ravens are doing in the draft. But coming up next, yesterday was disgusting. The Orioles lost to the Reds 24-2. They've only won two in a row once this year. They've only won one series. They sit at 9-12. How bad is it for the Orioles, or is it just early? We'll ask our friend Jacob Calvin Meyer. He's an Iowa Hall of Famer, covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. He joins us next.